This was the ethos from which the movement for the emancipation of the Niger Delta arose. MEND became, after 2006, the dominant Delta insurgent brand. Central Intelligence Agency reporting from Nigeria during the period of ExxonMobil's Ekat kidnapping episode described MEND not as an organization with any true leader or hierarchy, but as a label, at best an umbrella group or an umbrella label. As a consumer of the agency's reporting, who found the CIA's analysis credible, put it, to avoid being targeted, MEND lacked a central council that could declare who was an authorized commander and who was not. Its notional leader, Henry Oka, was an arms dealer who seemed to spend much of his time outside Nigeria. His supposed role as a supremo served as a convenience for a movement that was, in fact, made up of semi-autonomous, extortionate gangs of varied strength and character. Consumers of MEND's press releases and Facebook videos might imagine a tight-knit band of swamp guerrillas fighting for justice against cold-blooded international oil corporations. There was some of that, but the private security analysts who advised ExxonMobil, Chevron, Shell, and other corporations on kidnappings and safety described MEND more as a loose collection of armed young men, mainly from the Ijaw ethnic group, who used laptop computers to create an appearance of formidable coherence. MEND activists, or those using their brand name, fought at times with Nigerian security services, but they also collaborated with the Nigerian Navy in massive thefts of Delta oil from barges and pipelines, bunkering, as it was known, a racket that independent analysts estimated generated between $4.5 billion and $6 billion in total thefts during 2008 alone. In Irving, the global political mapping exercise revised annually by Rosemarie Forsyth, ExxonMobil's chief political risk analyst, painted Nigeria as a bright red transitional country, as opposed to blue democracies and yellow authoritarian regimes, a category marked by internal instability. Forsyth had also developed maps showing where all the world's instances of piracy and similar crimes took place. Nigeria stood near the top of that chart, too. As Rex Tillerson settled into office and assessed the greatest global risks to ExxonMobil's oil and gas portfolio, Nigeria looked unstable. It was getting worse. It was increasingly influenced by pirates, and yet its oil exports were central to the corporation's business model. Nigerian violence also stoked volatility in global oil prices and raised questions anew about America's energy security. ExxonMobil and the United States government, in alignment but each in its sovereign sphere, found themselves adapting after 2006, often in an atmosphere of confusion and argument, to the world that MEND had created. Tillerson was perhaps not ideally suited to assess Nigeria's moral swamps. His feel for political economies in poor countries was limited. Even during his rise within ExxonMobil's international divisions, he had never lived outside the United States. In any event, managing ExxonMobil's position in Nigeria in the post-Aceh era of the voluntary principles, heavy media scrutiny, and potential lawsuits would have been challenging even if Tillerson had been an anthropological expert. In September 2005, on the cusp of taking power in Irving, Tillerson had flown into Abuja. President Obasanjo had been making noise about forcing Western oil companies in Nigeria to move beyond pumping crude and into the refining of gasoline and other products for local consumption. ExxonMobil had steered clear of Obasanjo because he tended to pound tables and make demands. Nigeria was about the last place in the world Lee Raymond wanted to spend time. Tillerson decided to engage, however. He met with the Nigerian president, flew down to Lagos, where he stayed in the corporation's waterfront guest house in Lagos, traveled by helicopter to a few production sites, and departed. The corporation's message to American diplomats in the country was that they should encourage deregulation and work on improving the investment climate. Tillerson remained hopeful, if not in a willful state of denial, about ExxonMobil's place in the hearts and minds of Akwa Ibom's population. After the Ekat kidnapping, Local insurgents took periodic potshots at ExxonMobil transport vans. Speedboat pirates menaced the corporation's offshore platforms. Still, Tillerson believed that ExxonMobil remained largely insulated from the worst Delta violence and political dysfunction. In Akwae Boom, Tillerson boasted, "The community, in effect, protects us when militants from outside try to create problems. We have good relations down there. That is because we made some good decisions at the beginning, and we look to that as a model." The trouble the corporation endured, as MEND rose, was criminal in nature, Tillerson believed. He was mindful of the security situation, but felt nonetheless that ExxonMobil had a winning formula for obtaining community allegiance in Akwae Boom. This strategy was rooted, Tillerson thought, in firmness. He sought to imbue in locals the expectation that ExxonMobil knew how you say no and that the corporation could not be intimidated and would act consistently. Exxon had inherited its operations in the Niger Delta from Mobil. The corporation's subsidiary, Mobil Exploration Nigeria Incorporated, won its first license to explore for oil offshore of Akwae Ibom State in 1961. The first wells flowed later that decade. By the time of the merger, Mobil was on the way to becoming the second largest international producer in Nigeria, after Royal Dutch Shell. Large volumes and the light, sweet quality of the oil made its Nigerian offshore properties exceptionally valuable. Mobil, and then ExxonMobil, recruited, paid, supplied, and managed sections of the Nigerian military and police assigned to protect the Eket compound, the roads that led from there to the Kwa Ibo terminal on the Atlantic, and the roads around Akwae Ibom's state capital of Uyo, a fume-choked city that housed the outsized development projects of Victor Atta. These included the shopping centers Mountain of Fire and Miracles Plaza, and after 2007, the equally ambitious divinity-inflected construction projects of his successor, God's Will Akpabio. Akpabio enjoyed a fortunate name for a career in politics in a faithful state. He handed out T-shirts to his youth gangs with slogans such as "Stop Social Vices" and "Support God's Will."